So thank you. I'm here to talk to you today about a new declarative language for analyzing network traffic. So I'm currently with the NSA, and this work was done jointly with some people from Reservoir Labs, as well as my co-author, Matt Burnside, who wasn't able to make it here today. So the first question on your mind probably is, why does the NSA care about looking at network traffic? in particular, so why do we care about behavioral network traffic analysis as compared to pattern-based signatures? Well, unfortunately, not all of the hackers that we deal with, the more advanced persistent threats, remember to set the evil bit in their traffic. So that right here is out of the picture a lot of times. And in fact, there are a lot of cases, if you really start thinking about it, where it is impossible to identify whether something is malicious or not using a pattern-based signature. And if people know that you're using a pattern-based IDS like Snort, then they may design their communication protocols such that it's impossible to write a SORT signature for what it is you're looking at, unless you're just talking about IP addresses or something like that. So what we've learned is that behavioral analytics are necessary and sometimes very effective at detecting more advanced attacks, because it's really, really hard to hide your behavior, even if you can avoid pattern-based detectors. So a really great example of this is a sidejacking attack, which is basically listening at a coffee shop or something, looking for somebody's session ID when they're going to Facebook or some other website, and taking it and using it yourself. Now, there's no Snort signature you can write for this, but what you can do is you can look for session cookies that are used by more than one client. And this is a very effective way of detecting this attack, and you'd be hard-pressed to execute this attack without exhibiting this behavior. So what's the problem here? Why is this hard to do? Well, in this case, there is a significant semantic gap between saying this. If you were to say, we're going to look for session cookies for more than one client, that's a reasonably precise description of what we're trying to do here. Yet to actually implement this, there is a bro script on the outside that's over 100 lines of code. And so our thesis here is that there's a significant gap that we can close with the Chimera system. And so to give an example of why this is important, when I first started working at the NSA, we were, of course, doing behavioral type analysis for various applications. And we had some systems to do this, but these systems were not necessarily written by a computer scientist, so they weren't necessarily the easiest to use. Some of it was hard-coded, a lot of procedural code, data structures. And this is fine for people who are PhD researchers. If you say, hey, you have to write your own code, and you have to create an aging hash table in this data structure, you have to store stuff in here and then correlate it and do all these things, then that works. But a lot of people who are on the front lines simply don't understand how to do this. At the NSA and at the military in general, a lot of the people who are frontline analysts have recently enlisted in the military. They may be 18 years old and have no previous experience, certainly not a computer science degree. And so they cannot be expected to write this type of procedural code. However, if you really go and talk to some of these people, you realize that they do have an understanding of the attacks that are going on and what the behaviors are. It's just that they don't know how to get from point A here to point B. So that's the primary goal of Chimera, is to close this gap. Now, incidentally, another side effect of this semantic gap is that when we're writing research papers, a lot of times we say something like this in English in the papers, but it's not necessarily as precise as we'd like it to be. There are a lot of times where there's ambiguity. And so having a more concise language where we can more accurately specify what it is we're doing helps with reproducibility of results. So these are some of the high-level goals of Chimera. So first of all, we want it to be concise. This helps with sharing. It helps with being able to put these queries in research papers, for example. We want it to be declarative because there's no reason why somebody should have to understand how a hash table works to be able to express some of these more complicated analytics. We want the bar to be as low as possible for people to use this system. And we want it to be interoperable as well. Part of the goal here is to create a language that can be used in lots of different scenarios, not something that's tied to a particular application. And this will help with it becoming standardized, we hope, and further the ability of people to share analytics in this language. And then should probably be number zero, efficient here. So if it's not efficient, then we just can't really use it at all in most applications. So this is sort of a given here. So given these requirements for what we wanted to do, we took a look at what was out there and we decided that the SQL language for databases has a lot of these goals, satisfies a lot of these goals. So we used it as a starting point for our language. Now, there are some things that are a little bit tricky and annoying to handle with simple SQL when it comes to analyzing network traffic. The first is structured data. So almost all useful protocols have some sort of structured data inside of them, some more complicated than others. SMTP, for example, MIME can be an arbitrarily deep recursive tree. And if you try to deal with this type of thing using a traditional relational database and you put, for example, HTTP headers in a separate table and then try to join it, it just becomes annoying to deal with. So we allow lists and maps inside of the schema itself. And to support this, we've created a split operator, which will do the reverse of the join and emit one row per item in a data structure, as well as iteration and first class functions. So for example, you can iterate over a list of things and say for each, execute an expression and replace the item with the result of the expression. Or if you're searching for something, you can evaluate a Boolean expression and return the first item for which that expression is true. So another thing that we added beyond SQL and beyond existing streaming SQL standards is dynamic window boundaries. So if you look at some of the streaming SQL languages that are out there, they'll have things like range 60 minutes, slide 1 minute on the table to make their query streaming. And our insight is that you don't really need this, and this is unnecessarily restrictive. The things that you can express in this way are limited. Instead, we just have a dynamic expression grouped by something until some expression becomes true, and the same thing with a join. You just have a dynamic expression for window. And you can do things, for example, like say until the exponential weighted moving average exceeds some threshold. And this is really what we want to do a lot of times when we're trying to detect malicious things on the network. This gives us increased flexibility, and it also gives you immediate results. So if you say, hey, until this rate of packets exceeds some threshold, then generate an output. Well, if you're only reevaluating that every 1 minute, you may have had 59 seconds of some denial of service attack before you actually generate an output, which is not what we want here. So now I'm going to give you an example of this language being used in action. And one comment here first is that these functions that you see here are actually written in Bro and linked in statically. So these aren't part of the language itself, and these can be written as extensions. So I mentioned the sidejacking application at the start, and so this is a query that implements an analytic to detect sidejacking. And here what we're going to do is we're going to look for the session ID value inside of the cookie and find session IDs that are used by more than one client, where the client is defined by the combination of IP address and user agent. So if we take a quick look here, what we're going to do is we're going to aggregate a list of distinct source IP user agent pairs. So this is client list. They're also going to take the HTTP headers, which is a map data structure, find the cookie value, split it by a semicolon, iterate over all those values, split those by an equal sign, and find the first one that has the key SID, and then get the value for it. And that's going to be our session ID. And this is going to be from HTTP, and we're going to filter out values where the session ID is null, and then we're just going to aggregate by session ID and generate an output whenever the size of the client list exceeds one. So this is a pretty concise way, and yet precise way as well, of representing an analytic that detects this type of attack, even though what's going on behind the scenes involves a lot of complicated data structures potentially. So let's take a look at a second scenario here. This one's actually taken from the exposure paper that was at NDSS not too long ago. So this is one of the features they collected where they wanted to count the number of changes in TTL value per domain per day. So in this case, what we're going to do, first of all, is create a nested query that detects TTL changes. And this is going to use an aggregate by the domain name, and it's going to take the most recent TTL and compare it to the one before that. And if those two are different from each other, generates an output. And then those are going to get aggregated again by domain name, and we're going to count the number of changes total. And then our window in this case is just one day. All right, so example number three, DNS tunnel detection. Here we're going to take advantage of a join. Now, the idea behind the logic in this query is to count the number of DNS A record replies where nobody ever connects to the IP address in the response. Now, somebody might have just typed NSLOOKUP on their machine, but if this happens a lot, it's anomalous. And so then we're going to aggregate by the client IP in this case. You could also aggregate by the domain name of the server too if you wanted to do that. But we're just going to do the client here. So we're going to be looking at DNS, and we're going to be looking at IP packets, and we're going to join them together where the AIP equals the destination IP. But what we're going to use here is an exclusive outer join on the left side. And basically what that means is that if an IP packet occurs, then remove the result from the table and don't generate an output. And when the time difference between the oldest packet and the newest packet exceeds 5 minutes, generate an output if no packet ever arrived for the DNS response. So you have to keep it in the table for a certain amount of time before you declare it abandoned, and you can dynamically define that here. Now, you don't just want to probably look at every single time this type of event occurs, so we can also group by the client and set a threshold and say, well, this has to happen 100 times in an hour, and then we're going to generate an output. Okay, so I've talked about the way that the language works, and now I'm going to briefly describe how the compiler works. So first, there's a parse from the Khmer language into an abstract syntax tree. This is pretty standard. I'm not really going to describe it. It's just like a YAC parser. Then we take the abstract syntax tree and translate it into a core relational algebra. And then from this relational algebra, we generate row event code. All right. So here is an animation of the translation process. First, you have your source. In this case, we're going to pull from standard input. We're going to name our protocols that we're interested in. If there is an alias for those protocols, we are going to rename them, as is the case with the join. Then we add the node for the join operation, which is going to add the conditions for both sides. They're going to be used as keys to execute the join. Select values that pass a where condition here. Pass this next to a group operator, which is going to produce all the values for the select part of the statement, as well as aggregate based on the keys. And finally, in this case, there's another rename, so final projection and then output. And so this produces a data flow graph that we can use to actually start trying to run this query. So now I've shown up here a simpler query on the left, which is going to allow us to see how the Bro code generation works. It would be a little bit unwieldy with the previous one, which is more complex. So this query creates this data flow graph using the process I just described, where you have five nodes. And each connection between nodes has its own data type. However, selection nodes aren't going to change this type because they're just taking stuff and dropping it. They're not adding or removing anything from the data types. So the first part of code generation is producing these data types for each connection between two nodes. So in this case, we have a node from the parser, and then we have a node from the projection. So once these types have been produced, we create an event handler to execute each node. Here, L1 is taking in the raw pieces of data that Bro generates and producing L1 events. This is just a translation from Bro's data structures into our data structures. The L2 node here takes in outputs from L1 and just drops values where the method is not get. The next node here, L3, is just going to extract the value that we care about and pass it on to L4, which generates output. So here you can see how it's possible to translate this data flow graph into Bro event code. So one question you may have is this fast enough? What's the catch here with using the Chimera compiler instead of writing it yourself? Well, if you were to write this yourself, you'd probably just have a single event handler here that says, hey, if the method is get, then print out this original URI. You can use an earlier Bro data type that doesn't include the HTTP body because you know you don't need it. So there are a few optimizations here. No copying between the different types. The evaluation is inlined here in one event handler and using an earlier type. So slightly more compact and efficient. So what we did is we measured the benefit of these optimizations on some network traffic that we collected at a gateway, just 2 gigabytes unselected traffic. The base Chimera query that you just saw ran in about 14 seconds. We applied each of these optimizations one by one, found that not copying data and using an earlier event type bought us about 1.5% improvement. Each inline evaluation was a negligible difference. So there is a little bit of room for optimization here, but the point is that Chimera does not add substantial overhead. The 3% type overhead isn't really going to break the bank or affect your hardware purchasing decisions or anything like that. So we also tested this in real scenarios just to make sure that our assumptions in the simple scenario weren't false. So we implemented some of the queries that you see in the paper by hand and measured how fast they ran versus the Chimera compiler output. And again, we saw about 1% speed up by hand optimization here. So it is fast enough for real world scenarios because it's essentially a pre-compiled thing. It's not really going to add substantial overhead beyond what's already there in Bro to perform all the parsing and everything. So, what are the next steps here? Well, as you can see, we have a query being compiled down into relational algebra. So there are opportunities here to implement all the same optimizations that the database community has created over the years. Query optimization, if there are various Boolean filters, then computing the cost of each one and trying to order them so that you have the most cost reduction in the first expression. So these are all things that we would like to apply and include with the Chimera compiler. But in addition to optimizations at the data flow level, there are also potential optimizations we can make at the data structure level. For example, if you're doing the opposite of the query that I just showed, where let's say you want to look for packets where nobody ever did a DNS lookup that returned that IP address, you want to use an exclusive outer join on the right side, then really you're just doing an existence check. You don't need to keep the DNS responses around. All you need to do is keep the hash values of the IP addresses. So you could use a Bloom filter for this and potentially have a huge memory savings and be faster. So these are another type of optimization that we're hoping to look into. And this has to also be implemented closer to the end system, to Bro, because this is happening after code generation. So another thing we would like to look into a little bit more in the future is parallel processing. If people write complicated behavioral analytics in freeform C or Java, they may or may not write it in a messy way, and so it might be tricky to pull it apart and distribute it. With one of these queries, you know exactly what your key is, so it makes it easy to split up your analysis over many nodes. So automatically generating configurations that can be run in a parallel environment is another step we'd like to do in the future. And then finally, we will want to increase the number of targets for Chimera, because Bro is just one example. There are tons of systems out there that do data processing and analysis using some sort of input configuration language that is probably less than ideal. And this is a potential opportunity to improve the way that data processing is done in a lot of places and standardize it and make it easier for people to express what's going on. So, availability. We have a website, www.chimera-query.org. We have a language specification up there right now. The source code is pending pre-publication review. I don't know how many of you have gone through the pre-publication review process before. It's bad enough for papers, but it's very non-deterministic for source code. So we're working on that, but the goal is to have that available soon. We're going to have a BSD-style license free for use, and planning on having it maintained independently from Bro so that it's possible to create these targets for other languages and have that managed centrally, and hopefully have this distributed with Bro in the future so that it's easy for users to quickly write these queries without having to download a separate package. So if you go to the website, chimeraquery.org, you can actually sign up for the mailing list, and we'll send you an update when the source code is available. You will be the first to know, kind of like you can be the first to know about the next vice president if you download the mobile app. So it's like this, but it's for our query language. All right. And so in conclusion, we really hope that providing a standard language for analyzing streaming data and network data opens up the door for more behavioral analysis work. This is the type of thing where previously implementation is a significant barrier to entry, and now it might be possible to, instead of have maybe a grad student take several months to do this, it can be done as part of a senior level undergraduate course or something like that. So we really wants more people to be doing behavioral analysis, and we want it to be expressed in a language that we can take it and use it on the inside to try to detect hackers. This is something that's very valuable for us. And I also would encourage you to take a look at this if you are doing this type of research, so that you can, in an appendix or something, express the logic behind what you're doing in a more structured way that increases the reproducibility of these results and says exactly what you're talking about, so that we can, as a community, communicate a lot better about streaming data analysis. So that is is all I have. Thank you very much.
Questions for Kevin?
Christian Kreibig, ICSI. Thank you for this talk. I think this is terrific work. I have a fairly technical question about sort of the underpinnings based on Bro.
Okay.
And so when I use Bro, I find that one of the most useful features is the ability to use attributes, say, on tables that define how to manage your state. So, you know, if you have a table that maps, you know, IP addresses to some sort of bigger structure, you can say that if that particular entry hasn't been touched in a couple minutes, just get rid of it.
Yeah.
So this is very, very useful. But it's despite this usefulness, kind of hard to use because depending on the traffic that you will be analyzing, the amount of state you have to keep varies. And so if you don't get this quite right, then it might look like you're, you know, battling a memory leak or something like that. But it's actually just state keeping you have to fine tune.
Yeah.
And it looks to me like from the queries you showed on your slides that under the hood somewhere there would have to be some sort of state keeping like that. And
right.
So I'm wondering, is the sort of, you know, tuning of that something that is exposed to the user at some level, or can you just magically somehow get that right, or
right.
Is this
so,
kind of an issue?
The part of the language that handles that I didn't talk about is that each table has a limit that you can access. So your join table is going to have a limit on the maximum number of things that can be kept on it, and the same thing with your table for your aggregate operation. And when you're implementing an aggregate function, like let's say average, you don't just implement a single function, bro. You implement a handful of functions, you know, initialize, update, output, just like you're defining an aggregate operation in a normal relational database.
Right.
And then the state is managed for you in a state vector for that particular key in the table. And then when the table exceeds the maximum limit, stuff gets kicked out. So it really abstracts away a lot of the painful parts of dealing with state.
Okay. So essentially you're handling it through a maximum size on the table of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Very cool.
Any other questions? Okay, how about this? One issue with many IDS systems is how to handle, like, people intentionally trying to evade the IDS, like playing with the TTL and playing with badly fragmented packets and everything. Does Chimera help at all, or do you just say that's Bro's problem? The parser will either fail or do something.
Right. That's pretty much orthogonal to what we're doing here. And that really becomes an issue of how you define the schema of your protocol. If you say, well, I'm going to deal with HTTP and I'm going to parse the headers where when I get to the colon, I'm going to ignore the colon and I'm going to eat up 0 to n spaces and then I'm going to take whatever is after that until I hit my carriage return and then say that's the value. And so when you do the parsing, you're losing some of this low-level information. You're losing the way the packets are ordered and things like that. And so that's just something that you're going to have to deal with regardless. And this system doesn't really address that. That's sort of something you have to address when you're defining the protocol schema.
And so does Chimera let you define protocol schemas and parsers, or is that all in
that's
Bro?
That's inside of Bro.
Okay, you just use Bros. Okay, any other questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.